The Tom Woods Show, episode 1843.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, have you heard of ClickUp? It's the fastest growing productivity tool that's saving everyone one day a week. ClickUp is used by companies like Airbnb, Google, and Uber to get more done in less time by replacing work apps and bringing your tasks, docs, goals, chat, and more into a single place. ClickUp is free forever, so sign up today at clickup.com/woods. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I am joined today by New Hampshire State Legislator Melissa Blasek, who has been very, very vocal and active when it comes to ending the lockdowns. She's part of Reopen New Hampshire. There's plenty for us to talk about. She wrote to me recently, and I thought, why the heck are you not a guest on the show? So that's exactly what we're going to rectify now. Melissa, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I'm really excited to be here. I'm a big fan.
I appreciate that. I love New Hampshire. I grew up in northeastern Massachusetts, took many a trip across the border to make a substantial purchase for obvious reasons.
Yes, that's pretty much why people come here.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, when I was younger, there was a slogan in some kind of ad campaign for Massachusetts, and it was the slogan was "Make it in Massachusetts," and it was a thumbs up symbol. Uh-huh. And the New Hampshire people shot back with "Make it in Massachusetts and spend it in New Hampshire," which is what we did, indeed.
So yeah, we have no sales or income tax, and our liquor stores have the cheapest liquor in the country. So that's pretty much why people come here.
Well, I remember in the old days, I think it doesn't exist anymore, there were blue laws in Massachusetts. You couldn't buy liquor on Sundays. That was another thing that sent people up to New Hampshire. Anyway, let's talk about what's going on today. Now, you're wearing two different hats because you're running Reopen New Hampshire, and you're also a state legislator?
Yes. So I ran for office because of Reopen New Hampshire. Last year at this time, I was living a very quiet life. I kind of miss it. But then COVID hit, and I became involved with Reopen New Hampshire, and now I am the executive director. And we decided in May that the key to all of this was the legislature. And I feel like a lot of groups don't focus their activism in the right place. They focused on the governors. And the governors are drunk on power, right? They need the legislature to push them. So Reopen New Hampshire endorsed and helped candidates run. And we have 74 endorsed candidates currently in the legislature.
Wow, that's very impressive. Now, what part of New Hampshire do you represent?
I'm Hillsborough 21, so I only represent the town of Merrimack. The other thing that makes New Hampshire unique is that we have the most representative government in the world. We have 400 reps that represent 1.3 million people.
Okay, yeah, I had gotten a sense of that in talking to some of the Free State Project people. So how did you get to be involved in politics? Was there like a last straw? Did people ask you to do it? What happened?
So back in April, Reopen New Hampshire was formed, and I went to the protests, and then I just kept bothering them enough until they let me be on the board. And when we decided that the legislature was the key because they can vote to end the state of emergency and we needed people to run, I put my life on hold and decided to throw my hat in the ring and run for office. And I am the person sort of out in front of the COVID fascism issue in New Hampshire.
Wow. Okay. So let's go back to, let's say, March of 2020. Mm-hmm. Now, in March of 2020, I myself didn't exactly know what was going on. And I was a little bit worried. I was trying to stay up on whatever information I could get from other countries about this thing. But I didn't know what was going on, and I faltered a little bit. But what happened with me was I thought, well, I want to look around and see if there is any sign of hope. You know, I just want to see, or I want somebody to explain to me how the course of a pandemic generally runs and what I should look for good news. And the people I'd been following, they just had nothing in that. It was all doom. Mm-hmm. There was not even a sense that they were trying to find something favorable or or say, well, here's one way it might come to an end, or there was just nothing. It was like, am I the only person who wants to hope that we get, you know, this gets over with soon? Or, and then when I started to see states that opened a little bit here and there and didn't seem like there were really catastrophic consequences, I thought, well, okay, so why aren't we all having a serious conversation about this? Maybe we've misunderstood something about the way this thing operates. So I gradually came to get pretty darn ticked off at the whole public health establishment for partly for panicking people, but partly for recommending an approach that maybe works against some virus, I don't know, but it just didn't seem to have an obvious effect on this one. So what kind of a path did you take? Were you a skeptic right from the start?
Right from the start, I definitely was. This didn't ring true to me. I had already looked at the data coming out and it didn't seem like this was Ebola, you know? When they've had Ebola outbreaks, they have temporarily locked down just neighborhoods. And because it's a very deadly disease, it's not very infectious. So you can pretty much wipe it out with a very brief lockdown. And I started reading about all of that back in March and then thinking, well, but this one isn't like that. This is going to be endemic. And I don't understand what we're doing. And so when people kept saying, well, if we just lock down for 2 weeks, it'll be gone. I kept thinking, that's impossible. That's nonsense. That absolutely cannot be the truth. And even if it was hypothetically, which I did not believe from the beginning, but even if it hypothetically was the truth, I just absolutely don't believe that you sacrifice your rights, that you sacrifice the Constitution in the name of a perceived sense of safety that most likely doesn't even exist.
That's been my attitude pretty much through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So now tell me about Reopen New Hampshire. What exactly are you asking for? Just that people be able to make their own decisions?
Yes. So, I mean, right from the very beginning, right back in April, we weren't totally sure what was going on with the disease, but we were very sure that you still can't force people into public health policy. Public health policy is supposed to be a voluntary relationship between public health officials and the public, where they inform the public so that the public can make the best decisions for themselves. So we still advocated for personal responsibility right from the very start. And then obviously our first goal was to get businesses reopened, which here in New Hampshire, all businesses have been reopened without capacity limits since the summer. And we never re-shut down anything, even in this quote, second wave. But now we are advocating for an end to the state of emergency, which would also end the few COVID restrictions that are left. And a reformation of our state of emergency laws, which is what I'm working on in the legislature now.
Now, let's talk about the division in New Hampshire, because like anywhere, well, let's say, except a handful of places, I've been to Wyoming, and that's overwhelmingly one way politically. But for the most part, most places are pretty divided. And the division, particularly over this issue, has not been a cordial one. It's people accusing each other of awful things and awful intentions and stupidity and refusing to follow science and on and on. So what's been your experience in that respect?
Listen, we definitely have that. I would say that overall in the population, while I sometimes get discouraged by the apathy and the willingness to blindly follow, even those who are pretty apolitical have a more independent, liberty-minded attitude than in most of the country. And so I think that that has served us well because our governor is not terrible. He's not Andrew Cuomo. He's not Gavin Newsom. But he's a really good politician, and he can take the temperature of the public. And he makes his COVID decisions based off of that. So if it's based off of that, actually, we don't have that many restrictions. We do have a mask mandate currently, and we do have, like, I don't know, you have to have like partitions up between tables in a restaurant, you know, silly things like that. But we don't have anything else the way that other parts of the country do. And I think that is because of the general attitude of the public leaning a little bit more in a freedom direction. And then obviously the job of advocacy groups like Reopen New Hampshire is to push the envelope.
And we are constantly trying to educate the public. We had a big COVID-19 policy summit where we had some of the Great Barrington doctors. We had some OSHA reps talk about masks. We had Senator Scott Jensen. And we write op-eds a lot about, you know, the COVID data, a lot of what, you know, you do as well. And then we do a lot of advocacy to the legislature, because if the legislators believe that the public wants COVID fascism, they're not going to make moves to change it, right? So we do try to make our voices a little louder to the legislators, so that they start thinking like, wow, you know, look, there's this large group of people, which we are a growing number of people actually, who want this to be over.
Well, that's good. The problem with all this is that I think people on our side of things generally are not the protesting type.
We're not.
So it's hard to get them off their chairs and out there making noise. We're not the noise-making type. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we really, really need to be right now.
Yeah, we're the people with jobs and lives, and you know, we don't. And Reopen's been great because there's just been this group of people who have really put their lives on hold to make this happen. And it was formed by former legislators, actually, who are also activists. Like, they tend to be, you know, they do a lot of like two-way stuff and that sort of thing. So they're used to being activists. New Hampshire has the most amount of activists per capita or something like that. It's kind of wild here. So we're a little bit more used to doing things like this, but getting people off of their chairs and, you know, to, you know, write those emails and call their legislators, and it's a challenge. So that's a full-time job in itself.
Well, tell me your impression here of what the trends are. I thought that with the passage of time, more and more people would fall off the lockdown bandwagon just out of sheer desperation and frustration and mental health problems and whatever. And some have, and with the more time that goes on, the more people say, I just can't take it anymore. But I don't know that that's accelerating. It seems to me like maybe we've stalled, that people have ground themselves into their position, and regardless of what the numbers say or the trends, they're just going to stick to that. What's been your experience in terms of where people are now in February 2021 as compared to where they were in, let's say, September of last year?
I agree that for a while it stalled. And I think that the tide is turning in the last 4 to 6 weeks because of the vaccine and the new administration, and people are ready to move on. I'm hearing people that I can't even believe, honestly, say that, you know, well, the mask mandate needs to end, the regulations need to end, we need to have an exit strategy. When is this ever going to end? And I say that also because I know that the governor is starting to change his tune as well, and he tends to be an excellent person at taking the pulse of the public. So he started publicly discussing ending the state of emergency. He's publicly discussing removing all COVID restrictions in the next couple of weeks. And he would not be doing that if the public hadn't changed their perception. Also because, you know, the legislators are holding his feet to the fire. But it's also because the public, I think the vaccine made a big difference in the public for better or for worse.
Right. Because even some of the people who had been unreasonable on the lockdowns,
correct,
had been saying, well, we get the vaccine, then
yes,
we'll go back to normal. And then it's, well, now you can't even have that. Now, when you say the legislators have been holding the governor's feet to the fire, I know there are good legislators to be found in every state, you know, who've been good on this issue. But I don't know how many legislatures I can speak of that where we can say a whole bunch of the legislators in there have really been putting the governor's feet to the fire, like a big, big number of them. So do you think New Hampshire is unusual, or am I just uninformed? And I mean that sincerely.
I think it's unusual. Well, so I've spoken to legislators in Wisconsin. Obviously, Wisconsin did vote to end the state of emergency, but they're in a slightly different situation because they have a Republican-controlled legislature and they have a Democrat governor. We have a Republican-controlled legislature with a Republican governor, so the dynamics are a bit different. But also, New Hampshire's a different animal. You know, I know you work with, you know, Young Americans for Liberty, and they always talk about how New Hampshire is this whole other situation. They're lucky if they get, you know, one good Liberty legislator in, they had 69 wins in New Hampshire alone. So our reopen group, like I said, we had 74 endorsed legislators, which has made the basis of the Freedom Caucus. So there is a New Hampshire House Freedom Caucus, and the core group is like 70-something people. You could really expand it and really say there's about 130 pretty hardcore liberty-minded legislators that are willing to end this tomorrow if necessary. Now, out of 400, that's not the majority, but that is the largest voting block in the House. And the governor knows that. So, like I said, this is why I want to get the message out that people need to start pressuring their legislators, because there are things that the legislators can do to put the governor's feet to the fire if they get the motivation from the public. I've been motivating in the House. The public has been motivating the legislators here. We do have plans to hold his feet to the fire. There are always governor priorities, right? There's always governor priorities. So does he want the priorities, or does he want to hold on to the COVID fascism, you know?
Hey, folks, let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsor. I heard a crazy statistic the other day. Apparently, the average person is productive for less than 3 hours out of an 8-hour workday. So that means 5 hours of wasted time. How can that be normal? Well, normal, and try ClickUp. ClickUp helps you break the norm and get more done in less time by replacing all your unorganized work apps and bringing your tasks, docs, goals, chats, and more into a single shared workspace. ClickUp's customer service is unmatched, and they're making the world infinitely more productive. So join over 100,000 teams at companies like Airbnb, Google, and Uber who already use ClickUp to level up their productivity. With ClickUp, you'll save 1 day every week guaranteed, which means more time to spend with family, taking that ultimate road trip, or whatever you want to spend more time doing. ClickUp is free forever, so sign up today at clickup.com/woods. Tell me exactly what an organization like Reopen New Hampshire does, and are you in contact with Reopen groups in other states?
We have been. I have been in contact with some folks down in Florida. I've been in contact with Tammy Clark of Stand Up Michigan. She's the mask lady. Like she's an OSHA rep, but not a whole ton. I feel like a lot of the reopen groups have sort of fallen by the wayside in a lot of the states. Not in all of the states, but in a lot of the states. Ours is still going strong. We don't consider the job to be over until A, the state of emergency is ended, and B, there have been really fundamental changes to laws so that this situation can never happen again. I think other reopen groups weren't run by politicians. All of our core members, besides myself, were all like former politicians. So they kind of knew how the game was played. They trained me, and now I'm the current legislator. But I think that gave us a leg up, that we had people who had been on the inside. They know how things work, and they could kind of run it in a more efficient manner.
So let me get this straight. You ran for state representative clearly and unambiguously on a reopen platform. So there's no way that people could have buyer's remorse. I had no idea what I was voting for when I voted for this person, right?
I did not keep it a secret. No, everyone knew what I was doing. Yep.
And so were you up against an incumbent? What was the situation?
Again, New Hampshire's a little bit funky because we have 400 reps for, you know, 1.3 million people. So in my district alone, there are 8 reps. So originally I had a primary, but we only had to kick like a couple people out to get the 8. I think there were 9 people who ran, so only one was out. And then there were 16 then who ran, 8 Democrats, 8 Republicans for 8 seats. And I did end up kicking out incumbent Democrats. So,
okay.
Yes.
So was the race, I presume, all about COVID?
No. I mean, I was the only person in my district who ran more on that platform. Nobody else really ran on that platform. And I won't say that I put the reopen specific stuff out there in a really strong light, only because we've been very anti-governor in our messaging. And a lot of people were anti-COVID fascism, but they were not anti-governor Sununu because they felt that he just wasn't as bad as other governors. So, okay, you know, can't criticize him too strongly. But I definitely put it out there that when people would ask me, why are you running for office? And I would be honest and say, well, I decided that if next term they voted to end the state of emergency and it lost by one vote because I wasn't there, that I would never be able to live with myself. And that's why I'm running.
Wow.
I am the person who is sponsoring the resolution to terminate the state of emergency.
Well, okay. So it's, but it sounds to me like in general, things are actually better in New Hampshire than I thought they were.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Like I said, we have all businesses have been open with no capacity limits since the summer. We got a mask mandate just after the election, which was a real kick in the gut because the governor had sort of behind the scenes promised that he wouldn't make any new restrictions after the election. And then he did. I signed on to an impeachment initiative to impeach the governor after that.
Wow.
I know. I hadn't even been sworn in yet. And I really jumped in the deep end with that one. But listen, I argue that while he has been better than a lot of other governors, there aren't different levels of tyranny. He's violated the Constitution numerous times. And I don't ever think that that's okay. Now, that didn't, we did withdraw that, but we gave it a shot.
Wow. So you went from leading this quiet life to being part of an impeachment campaign against the governor of your state. That's what COVID can do to a person.
I am such a different person than before COVID hit. I can't even recognize myself for like a year ago. I don't know. COVID hit, lockdown happened, and I was so aghast that, and I guess I saw that we would still be in this a year later. All the way back at the beginning of this, I thought, when you give the government that type of power, you don't get it back ever fully, number one. And number two, without a huge fight, the fight that's going to happen to ever make this end, because there's never going to be an end date to COVID. That's not how this is going to work. So it scared me far more than a disease ever could. And I sort of became a different person.
What do New Hampshire's numbers look like compared to other states?
Very like right on par. We've had nobody die under the age of 20, I believe, with COVID. Almost exclusively our deaths are like over 70, but certainly over 85. We have the highest nursing home death rate in the country, higher than New York, yes. We're at 80-something percent of all of our COVID deaths were in nursing homes, which that was a big campaign for Reopen New Hampshire back in June when the beaches were still closed, was why are you spending so much time deciding whether I can sit on a beach? And you should be spending more time figuring out what you're going to do about the vulnerable populations in nursing homes. But overall, if you look at 2020 versus 2019, we did have a slight uptick of all-cause mortality, but it was exclusively in the over 85 category, which is a very small portion of the population.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just looking at the numbers and I was looking at your charts over at the Worldometer site. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I see the so-called second wave and the curve coming down. And the thing that I'd really like to get one of these people to explain is why these curves come down when there's clearly, they can't even pretend that there was a sudden and dramatic change in the public's behavior. We all know that's not true. Yeah. Everybody's, if anything, they're more lax than they were as the curve was going up because they've just given up on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So given that they think everything's driven by behavior and bad people make the numbers go up and good people make them come down. Now, again, I see the superficial plausibility that I probably believed that back in March of 2020. And as I say, maybe there's some virus that's true of, but for whatever reason, doesn't seem to be the case here. And so I wonder what they say. How do they account for New Hampshire's numbers ever coming down? How could they ever come down until we get to herd immunity, which they always say is, you know, a gazillion years away? How do they even explain it? I don't think anyone asks them to try.
I think, I mean, I've studied a little bit of epidemiology. I've spoken with the epidemiologist with the Great Barrington Declaration, and they've explained some things to me, but this is pretty much how all viruses work. This is nature. So when people say that they can somehow artificially, all these human interaction, you know, changes can impact nature, that's just not the case. This is how it works. You get to a certain point where there's just enough people who are around each other that are immune, that things kind of fall off again. And there's always going to be curves like that. And then in addition, you can see that COVID makes really strong, like seasonal waves, right? So I'm obviously in a very clear northern hemisphere, and our curves are just perfectly in sync with when we're all inside because it's cold, you know? And then again, enough people get immune within that situation and then kind of falls off again. I'm not going to say that we're not going to have another wave. It may happen. I have absolutely no idea. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to make any assumptions. But when a virus is going to virus, it viruses.
Right. Well, that is pretty much the lesson of what we've been observing. Mm-hmm. What's the website for? Do you have a website for Reopen New Hampshire?
ReopenNH.com. Yep.
Isn't that something? I typed in, this is my mistake, into Google. I typed in reopen space NH. Mm-hmm. First thing that comes up, covidguidance.nh.gov. Welcome. Safer at home is what I see. Then I get something from the governor's office. Then I get something from the economic opening task force. And then I have to scroll and scroll and scroll. And, I mean, again, I don't know that I don't want to attribute to wicked conspiracy what can be explained through simple technology, but that's weird. That's the result.
We've been censored a lot, but as we all know, this is a huge issue. Our Facebook page is kind of being decimated. We had a Facebook group and it's kind of being decimated because, you know, nobody can post anymore and they're constantly taking down posts and, you know, all that sort of thing. But yeah, our website has all the bills that we're watching and advocating for. It has a list of all of our endorsed legislators. It has a stories page where people write in about their issues that they, the problems in their life that have been attributed to the government COVID response. We have different op-eds that we've written about different subjects and a link to our COVID-19 policy summit.
Well, I was just looking at it because I found it by typing it in directly, but also I went to duckduckgo.com. I typed in reopen NH. First item was yours. So it's not editorializing. It's not telling me what I should be looking up. I should be looking up what the authorities tell me. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I already know what the authorities tell me. I already know I should be standing 6 feet away from you. I know. Okay?
Yep.
I'd like to read this if you don't mind. And then right underneath yours is a website that doesn't work, which I love. It does not work. Right underneath you is Reopen NH When Ready. And the site is reopennhwhenready.com. And you can see from the preview what this is going to be all about. The novel coronavirus is a highly contagious and dangerous virus causing a global pandemic, and New Hampshire is not immune to it. We need to keep our state safe by following safety measures put in place by doctors, scientists, medical professionals, and our elected leaders. Can you imagine being through almost a year of this and still spouting BS like that? You're still at that level?
You discovered something new I didn't know. That must be our, you know, hate version of our site.
Yeah, it doesn't work. You click on it, it doesn't work. I love it.
That's even funnier. we got a lot of pushback. We were out there, you know, got our first protest was like in early April when everybody was terrified. And wow, the hate was really, really, really strong. Like, we were the grandma killers. We were directly responsible for every single person who got COVID. But we did push the Overton window and everyone can just deal. We didn't have any worse of an outcome or scenario than anywhere else did.
Yeah, no, you clearly didn't. I mean, I looked at your numbers. They're perfectly normal. There's nothing out of the ordinary in them. You've done better than an awful lot of states. So.
Absolutely.
You know, someday somebody will write the definitive story of this. Although the thing is, the country is so divided. The country's living in two different realities. I don't know that a book, I don't know the charts, numbers, I don't know how to crack through into this bubble that these people are in.
They are really in a bubble. You know, I have to say, I've lost a lot of friends about this that I couldn't even imagine that something like a disease would get in the way of our relationship, but they're so on another wavelength that they think, I guess they think that, you know, I want people to die and I'm irresponsible and unscientific and spouting misinformation. I've lost family members, I've lost friends over this. It's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, sometimes they portray it as if it's just a simple choice. You know, you can stay home and then there won't be any COVID deaths. Or you can go out and live your life and there'll be a bunch of COVID deaths. But if they're going to be a bunch of COVID deaths, apparently, no matter what. So you can suffer those deaths while also ruining people's lives, or you can suffer them while not ruining people's lives. And also you can minimize them by targeting your efforts. I mean, instead of just fruitlessly trying to pass out tests to tens of millions of people, why don't you focus on the actual ones who are in real danger, and then you would do a lot better, it seems to me. But you know, here I am, a mere amateur on the sidelines, but that does seem to be the sensible approach.
Right. I've heard you say before, but, you know, anything that's enjoyable in life seems to, you know, spread COVID, which is just nonsense.
Yeah, right. I mean, that seems to be it. Like, they don't know what they're doing. So their general guiding principle is, well, if it makes people happy, we should probably just ban it just to be safe. And if it's a crazy inconvenience that obviously doesn't do anything and just puts people out, we should implement that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I'm totally with you. Life is not worth living just to not die.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. So, well, I'm glad you got, again, I should have known better, but I kind of conflated all the New England states together into Massachusetts, which, because I'm from there, I have this tendency to do.
We are an island in a sea of hell.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a mistake.
I literally have not left this state. I am 15 minutes from the Massachusetts border. I have not left this state since COVID started because I'm terrified to like step foot outside of this tiny little island of sanity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. I know. I mean, I visited Massachusetts because I spent a few days in New Hampshire last summer, and I stopped in Massachusetts because I do still have a little bit of family there. And it was, yeah, I had to, it was the mask in the restaurant policy, and they want you to, but they wanted you to write down your name and address to, you know, and normally I wouldn't do something like that, but I want to see my aunt, you know,
I mean,
I'm sorry for all the purists out there. I want to visit my family, and doggone, I want to eat this restaurant. So I'm going
to
do this
one thing.
You
know what? We have that too, actually, where we have to do the contact tracing in the restaurants. Now, the restaurants do not have to participate, but basically DHHS has blackmailed them into submission by saying that if somebody gets COVID in their restaurant and they were not contact tracing, they'll blast them out to the media and make them, and then the public perception has made them have to shut down for a while.
Right.
And they don't want that to happen. So now we all do contact tracing. So one of my main goals legislatively for next year is to start reining in DHHS authority. They're out of control.
I don't remember the details, but I do remember hearing that Maine was pretty strict in its policies. And I, you know, Maine is not a very populous state. And I'm quite sure it relies, at least to some degree, on visitors, tourists who want to go see beautiful Maine and eat lobster and stuff like that and see lighthouses, which is why I've gone to Maine.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking they are absolutely killing themselves. I don't know if that's gotten any better.
It's gotten a little bit better recently, but not since the tourist season ended. So no, Maine is devastated. It truly is devastated because a lot of those, especially the ocean towns, are just vacation. It's vacation land. That's actually what they're called, is vacation land. And she didn't let anyone vacation there all summer during vacation season.
Well, what would be your, let's say, your parting words to people? Because we have a lot of people, if the emails I get are any indication, are very frustrated where they're living, and they feel helpless. And you have had some success, albeit in, as you say, a somewhat unusual political environment. Do you have any words of encouragement for them?
Yeah. Stop focusing on your governor. The governors have had too much absolute power for too long. They've lived in a year of being a little dictator of their state, okay? They're a lost cause as far as, and they're not going to answer your email. They're not going to listen to your phone call. They don't care. What they do care about are all of their legislative priorities. And that is where the legislature comes in. But your state rep or assemblyman, whatever you call them in your state, they probably, or at least their staff, in New Hampshire, we don't even have staff, they'll read your email. They will pick up the phone. They'll listen to their phone messages. You need to start lighting a fire under your legislators. And there is something in activism called like the drip method. So like one email is a drip, and then a week later, another email, and then another email. And also phone calls are far more of an issue for them. Like they feel more uncomfortable with phone calls. So pick up the phone and start leaving messages for your senator and your state rep and tell them there needs to be an end game with the state of emergency and the COVID restrictions need to end.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. You have to give us some kind of I'd like to say you got to give us a blueprint for how you're going to get out of this, but I don't even, they're stupid blueprints and they're, you know, their tears and their this and that. They don't even know what the heck they're doing. They don't. I mean,
they don't.
There's no number that Andrew Cuomo is looking at that tells him now restaurants should be open at 35% capacity instead of 25%. There is no number that tells him that. There's no expert that's telling him that. They're all the blind leading the blind. So
it's unscientific nonsense. Yeah. It is all arbitrary, unscientific nonsense. And I can tell you that they sit around, all your politicians running your state, and they know it's all unscientific nonsense. They literally know it.
Yeah.
But they think that the public is too scared. And so that they need these arbitrary measures to feel better. That's literally what they all talk about. It's unreal. So you need to let them, I want the public to know that they need to let them know that you aren't afraid and that you don't want this. This is not something that the public is asking for anymore.
Well, this is good stuff. I want people to check out what you're doing. So, because it's also a good model for elsewhere, reopennh.com. I'll also put that up on the show notes page. That's tomwoods.com/1843. And let me just say, you're such a, it's like a storybook, your story here. You went from private citizen to now heading up the most important initiative in your state in the 21st century. Even though we haven't had the next 80 years, we already know this was the most important thing. And you did that. So that must be almost surreal for you.
I'm a hot mess usually, actually, because I'm so all over the place because it's a lot. But thank you so much. I do appreciate it because I get, you know, the other side a lot. I get criticized a lot and all of that. And it's been a huge shift in my life from, I was a full-time mother and like a music teacher part-time. And now I'm doing this. So it's been a big shift and I really appreciate it.
Well, very, very good work. And I'm glad we were able to hear from you today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that's our episode for today. Now, that crazy thing with Google, that just still astonishes me, even though I know we already know what big tech is up to. But still, to see it right in front of your own eyes is quite striking. And it kind of puts me in mind of what's happened on Facebook, where for years I resisted when people said, and people in my private group can attest to this, for years they said to me, you should get off Facebook and move this group onto another platform. And I said, look, I understand the problems with Facebook, but the problem with moving is everybody's on Facebook and they are always scrolling and they're there automatically. I don't think that will be the case on another platform. And so the vibrancy of the group will be gravely diminished. You know, we have a group that just runs itself. We have great conversations, great people, normal people who don't accuse you of wanting to commit murder because you ate dinner in a restaurant. And they post really interesting things, and it's just a great thing to be part of. And I didn't want to lose that, and I thought I would lose that if I moved it off Facebook. Well, doesn't happen a lot, my friends, but old Woods was wrong here, okay? I am very happy to say I was indeed wrong for a couple of reasons. Number one, it turns out people really are willing to get over there and be active much more than I thought. But secondly, I realized that I was tapping into a group of people who had been invisible to me up to now, namely people who refused ever to be on Facebook and who, as soon as I moved, they said, yes, I'll join the Supporting Listeners program because now, in good conscience, I can be part of your group. And you don't have to be in the group. You don't like any form of social media at all. You don't have to be in the group to join me over at supportinglisteners.com. You get a lot of other benefits. But that group that we have is so wonderful that it really has been the key selling point of supportinglisteners.com. So we're over on MeWe now, and the pathway to get to the group is through supportinglisteners.com. I do want to invite all you folks listening to come on over and join us there. And that's where I announce things like I'll do a private event for supporters, and I'll tell them, look, this everybody who's a member of Supporting Listeners program, we had a Jordan Page concert at my house. Then we did the big event last October, when in many states you weren't even allowed to have the kind of gathering we had at my house. And I did that because we were all losing our minds and I wanted people to remember what normal life was like. I'm going to do another one of them this year, and then I'm going to have a special reception just for members of the Supporting Listeners program at the 2000th episode event of the Tom Woods Show, October 16th, 2021. So there are a lot of unannounced benefits. You look at the benefits, supportinglisteners.com, those things aren't even listed. The things I just talked about, the events at my house, the special thing at the 2000th episode. These are just extras that I throw in just spontaneously. So if you like this show, and if you would like to be part of a community where you would be the normal person for a change, then I welcome you with open arms at supportinglisteners.com. All right, that's it for today. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.